Hello, welcome and thank you for joining us and listening to our podcast, The God Beyond the Bible. Our podcast is released weekly each Friday. The content of each episode is based on the questions and curiosities we all have about God and the Bible. Many of our topics are considered taboo in the minds of the mainstream church. You will find our discussions to be, I think, refreshing and often far from traditional. But we don't just skirt around these complex issues, but confront them head on, and not in the way you're used to hearing them discussed on typical Christian talk shows. I'm Alan Rowland, creator and host of The God Beyond the Bible. As of the launch of this podcast, I've been a pastor for more than 35 years. My co-host is my daughter, Trayson, and our engineer co-producer is my daughter, Tabitha. Our mission is to encourage our audience, along with us, to open our minds to the reality that God is simply too big to be fully explored or experienced by the reading and studying of a single ancient work. In short, the Bible's not the sum of God, and to think this is to limit what He has done, is doing, and what He will do in our future. So with introductions made, thank you for listening, and let's dive into the topic of the day.
Okay, welcome, seekers, to podcast number 64 of God Beyond the Bible, a podcast made by seekers and for seekers. Thanks for everyone who stuck with us during the month of April as we had to replay previously recorded episodes because social distancing kept us out of the studio. Right. You know, we had moved our studio into a more confined area for the winter while our regular studio is under construction, and we are very glad to say we are back in our now remodeled and larger studio. And as always, we welcome new listeners who may just be curious what God Beyond the Bible means.
Yeah, we've had some people that says, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Before they even listened.
Right. And I want to send a shout out, you know, this week to our faithful listeners that are always listening, and they, you know, send us text messages and emails and all of that fun stuff. Mm-hmm. And we love it. Kirk and Miss Dolores and Tawana and Blake and Earl that listen all the time. We love you guys. And Miss Natalie, we've really loved getting those emails from you, and yes, keep them coming.
Sure. Are we ready for
quote of the week?
Mr. Norman Vincent Peale. What was his power of positive thinking? Yes. Wasn't that his deal? Came from him, our quote of the week. And it's a pretty simple one. Change your thoughts and you change your world.
I like that.
Well, last episode, we touched on the ongoing coronavirus or COVID-19 pandemic and how it has impacted our lives spiritually, mentally, and emotionally, and just how it may serve to accelerate the metamorphosis of the modern church in the direction of the virtual church replacing these brick-and-mortar establishments.
So in this episode, we'd like to explore this concept a little farther and talk about what we think a virtual church might look like, or at least how it may operate and serve the community it represents. And I'm going to go ahead and say that if you hear that popping noise, it's our stove, because even though it's in the middle of May in Arkansas, it is cold.
We have had blackberry winter right here. Yes, I'm telling you, and it's lasted two or three days, mm-hmm, or nearly a week now. It's been, matter of fact, we've been down, we've had a frost warning.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it actually killed one of my plants.
Wow. All right, let's jump right into segment one. Considering the experiences of the past couple months, do you think we're ready for the virtual church? I mean, do you think it'll be more of a generational transition? Will it be what? Do we have some left of the silent generation? Do we have any left of the silent generation?
What is the silent?
They were before the greatest generation. They're the ones before the great, before World
War
II.
Probably a few, but not many.
But then we had, okay, but do you think the transition, do you think it'll be, what do you think? Do you think it's going to be by your generational thing? Is it going to be the great generation, the baby boomers, the Gen X, the millennials, the Zoomers? Is that what you said kids are now?
Zoomers? I mean, I think that there are the older generations who are going to hold out with that. You know, because it's what they know, and there's nothing
not criticizing them.
And we still have a lot of the baby boomer generation, especially, that are still really uncomfortable with technology, and it makes it harder to sort of embrace the idea of virtual when you sort of have that fear of technology because it's something you don't understand, and it can be really complex.
So in a sense, have virtual churches been operating to some degree for decades in the form of televised services and televangelist platforms?
Yes and no.
And I think really, in a way, they have. It's not been, I can remember it was really criticized by the local church, the people that would say, well, I watch so-and-so on television. Oh, that's not the same.
That's
one.
Not a replacement. Yeah. And
that's become, not a substitute for well, a church
I
family.
I don't mean this mainly, but, you know, it doesn't help that a lot of the televangelists, especially from the 80s and 90s, were just not, ended up being very crooked people. I mean,
And not painting them with a broad brush, no. But yeah, some of them, well, we'll be talking about that, but money was a...
Yes. Well, and that's something that I was going to say. You have to consider that when we're talking about, you know, the classic styles of televangelism, mm-hmm. TV and things like that, you have to be careful because money dominated. You had to have the money to get on the airwaves, and that really limited the messages that we're getting out of there.
Sure.
And while most of these televised services have a brick and mortar established organization behind them, even funding them by buying expensive airtime, and with this age of free media removing that obstacle, do y'all think this old expensive commercial TV ministry has pretty much reached the end of its effectiveness?
Again, I think like the church is going to be those holdouts that are still mm-hmm. going to be going on. But, you know, guys, it's pretty much over for...
Yeah,
I mean, why are you going to buy expensive television time?
Right.
Well, because the market is not in the big three anymore.
Well, and let me ask this, you know,
I'm talking about the listening market.
Yeah. You're someone who's always been interested in media, radio, music, right. that kind right. of thing. 20 years ago, could you have imagined being able to just sit down in your little studio and put out something
no,
to the world?
No, and I'm glad I didn't. I looked at a radio station one time and thought about purchasing mm-hmm. a radio station because it was a local one. It wasn't a big one, but it was for sale because I always wanted to be a voice and, mm-hmm. and, you know, an influence like that. And I'm sure glad I didn't.
Well, I mean, who would have thought that
I'm sure glad
that
I didn't spend my money on that.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. During its heyday, let's say the 60s, 70s, and 80s, that even Tracy can't remember any of those, no. some of these TV ministries have amassed great wealth and created empires for themselves and their children, which succeed them. And let me just say something. One of the biggest turnoffs I ever had, I'm not going to call his name, but they're one of the oldest ministries, and the son took the ministry over, and I was watching. He was being questioned in the media. Now, this is several years ago. This is way back in the 70s or the early 80s. It was in the 80s, I guess. He was being questioned. He had taken over for his father's big campus and ministry, and like they all do, a big college and everything. Mm-hmm. It generates lots of money. And they were saying, well, you know, you're asking for this money, and you're right now, you and your wife are building a, you know, you and your wife right now are building like a 12,000 square foot home for you and your family there on the campus, and said, you know, do you think that this is good financial? And I'm paraphrasing here but I can remember him sitting there, and I'm not going to tell you who he was, but he said, well, let me tell you this, my wife and I and two kids have been cramped in this 4,000 square foot home there on campus for, that's what he said. That was the exact words. He said, we've been cramped into this little 4,000 square foot home. So we've paid our dues. We need.
Oh, and see, that's just sad in itself.
It's so sad because he believes that he's suffering for the ministry to live in a 4,000 square foot home. Mm. Okay. But anyway, so these TV ministries have amassed great wealth and created empires for themselves and their children, succeeding them, let's be honest, mainly because they had means of funding expensive airtime, which narrowed the field to only a few who could afford to televise, and resulted in a larger audience and, of course, generated more revenue. Now, has this explosion of free media access ended this reign of the wealthy elect ministries?
I mean, if
you choose to put it in that terms.
I mean, I really do. I hope. I love the fact that if I'm interested in a certain subject, even, you know, spiritually or whatever, pertaining to the Bible, I can just search it and I can pull up a video, a sermon from anywhere in the world.
Yeah,
that's
I can pull up a podcast of people who are either agreeing or disagreeing with me and putting out their opinions.
Yeah.
And most of the time, they're not going to nag you
to give them money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the end, you have to show. I mean, I remember I used to watch someone tell, and when they get to the begging part, I'd shut it off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just shut off. I'd hear the message. And that's a sad thing. They would spend 10 minutes of that 30-minute airtime.
Well, and then the morality of it, because I know there were some back then, and maybe even still, that if you send this much money
for either? Is it, what do they do? Do they pray for you or do they promise God's blessings?
Seed money thing, yes. You know, seed money. You send us this seed money. And they're sending it to God, though. I think of Hank Williams Jr., you know, that song of his, what is it? Preacher man, he wants me to send my money to the Lord, but he gave me his address. Trying to think of that song, it just got away from me.
Well, and let's go a little farther back. You know, long before there were TV evangelists, those of means were able to get their ministry and their message on the radio. And if you research, you'll find that there were some very successful radio evangelists back in the day. While there are probably a few of the older ministries still supported by a radio platform and audience, it's probably fair to say that they are all but gone.
Yeah, I couldn't think of any right now that are still going on. Oh, so is it safe to look at the evidence and deduct that the advent of internet podcasts and free video platforms like YouTube will or possibly already has delivered the death blow to these ministries who are supported by the old platforms?
I think so. I mean, everything...
Yeah, I wouldn't want to have my eggs in a basket of buying, you know, $1 million worth of airtime a week.
No.
you know.
Okay, so without sounding judgmental, we know that for the few televangelists who rose to the top during that heyday era was due solely to the money that they were able to garner. And has that playing field now been leveled?
Yeah, I think it really has.
Yeah.
I think it really has. Yeah.
So, considering the expansion of listeners and viewers' options, having gone from the total control of a few big broadcasting corporations to literally thousands of ways to access entertainment and information, what impact will this have on those, such as ministries, that are trying to amass an audience?
Well, it's going to be, you're going to have to work at it. You're not going to just be watched because you're on one of the big three.
Right.
Not people are not going to just turn there because you're on.
Well, and I gotta say, if I'm looking for stuff, I don't go to TV ever.
No,
I mean, I really
no
don't. That's
anymore.
Not what you do.
And we're going to talk about that. And we're going to talk about the TV impact later. But well, with that, please allow us to conclude this first segment and quickly regroup and return with part two.
Okay, welcome to part two of episode 64 of God Beyond the Bible. Today's topic is the virtual church versus the old established brick and mortar organized church.
And we spent the first segment asking and answering some questions concerning the challenges of the modern organized church, more specifically, the rise and the fall of television ministries and how the internet has contributed to the decline and possibly even the collapse of those type of ministries.
Now, some have speculated that in some ways, the mainstream media has experienced a resurgence and return of their audiences during this pandemic. And some are concerned that this could be motivation for the mainstream media to keep up the hype level over the whole thing, or even turn into a platform that's looking to search out, overemphasize, or even create new things like this COVID thing to keep their audiences tuned in. What do y'all think of that?
That's something new.
Yeah, right.
Well, it's not new, but you see...
We've been in a society of extremes.
But never before have there's been so much competition to...
It's true.
...pay media, you know, to pay-to-play media, like the big three, you know, like the networks. Now, they've garnered a bunch of that back because, I've got to admit, I've looked at the news more...
Sure.
Than I have in 2 years.
Well, I was talking to someone.
I've tuned in, you know, to hear.
He likened this COVID-19 and how we all check the numbers daily, you know. He likened it to, he said he can remember during the Vietnam War that's what you did. You watched.
And you watched the evening news and they told you how many boys.
Yeah, this week or this today. But as far as media's.
But, I mean, do you guys not think they're really going to jump? I mean, you know, now there's real motivation here. You know, they've gained back a lot of listening. And if this just goes away, I'm just making a point.
I mean, I agree. And none of us are saying that this is not a real pandemic.
No,
and
I'm not intimating anything like that.
But I think that you need to be very clear about how media can spin things.
Well, because we don't, sensationalism.
We don't have a media anymore that just gives us the facts and lets us make our own conclusions from that.
I mean, and as someone with anxiety, I haven't watched any of the mainstream media's coverage of this. I follow our governor on Facebook, on social media, and I follow our local county judge, and that's where I get all of the orders that are coming down. They post them, and I kind of can keep up with what's going on.
Let's talk about that just a little bit. I mean, we're completely off the topic here because we're going, but let's talk about that a little bit. What about all of the political people, the elected people, let's say? I don't want to just call them politicians, but you know, they're getting a lot of free airtime. There's certain ones of them getting a lot of free airtime. I mean, you know, out of this. I mean, they're getting their face on the television.
I think our governor was doing a daily update for at least 30 minutes to an hour.
I think it was an hour every day. And it was broadcast on radio, everything, the television stations, everything. So, you know, they're kind of enjoying that spotlight. But, you know, you got to really watch. People are fickle and things like that. Politics are fickle. That could really jump up and...
Oh, yes.
But you know they're not having to buy any. Okay.
Right. Okay. So anyway, back to what we're talking about,
which is the collapse of those ministries and all of that stuff.
So in this segment, to the best of our limited ability, let's sort of lay out how we think a virtual church might look and operate. Are there some successful virtual churches that already exist that we can use for a model?
And I'm going to tell you, not really.
I couldn't find any church that tied to a brick and mortar.
Yeah, yeah.
So, well, I just want to make sure I wasn't skipping you.
Okay.
Right now, I skipped her in the last episode. I'm just teasing her. Right now, like the old television models, most online churches are established and supported by brick and mortar campus. One of the churches with the largest online virtual attendance is the Life Church, based in Edmond, Oklahoma. And Life Church estimates that its weekly virtual attendance is at 70,000. And that's a lot of people tuning in.
Started from a guy in his garage. Mm-hmm. But remember, I think they've got a campus leaving a teaching, you know.
Several campuses actually across the United States. I'm unsure how the campus operates.
They launched during the whole television media thing, launched on local television, and then they moved but again, they have that virtual attendance of 70,000, but they have that brick and mortar mega church that's supporting this too. Okay, it seems that for the most part, the virtual church is operating based more on the old model of being an extension of the local brick and mortar organization than being an actual virtual church standalone. But today, we want to explore what a purely online virtual church might look like without the support of the literal congregation and organization as a platform for support. In other words, without the brick and mortar to back it up.
Am I the only one who kind of had fun going through like all of the little ideas of the way you can make this work?
Definitely need to think about. Okay, so let's assume it all starts pretty much the same as it always has, with someone feeling a call or feeling they have a message that others may be inspired or impacted by. So one could just use their cell phone to set up a podcast, a YouTube account, or both. And in a few hours with minimum financial investment, voila, they have an online ministry. But as we have discovered in our short podcasting career, unlike mainstream media, you are competing for an audience in a very saturated and widely dispersed platform. I mean, in other words, people have a lot of choices. So why will they choose my podcast over the tens of thousands of others, especially if my message is the same old message presented in the same old way?
And I'm going to predict that they're not.
Yeah, right. Well, it is hard in waiting for those discoveries for someone to search the right thing to go, I'm going to watch this person's opinion of things.
Right.
So, like any venture in any field, most attempts will fail for lack of personal commitment. And again, as we've discovered, if all you're offering is a parroting of the same thing and using the same approach as everybody else, the procuring of an audience base may prove to be very difficult and frustrating. And this is especially true in the ministry field.
It is.
So let's say, as we
have here at God Beyond the Bible. You use family and friends to establish an audience. Mm-hmm. It takes a commitment of time and resources to maintain a weekly venture. And as we will discuss in the next segment, it pretty much has to be a commitment to the ministry itself. Don't expect a flush of money or a bunch of willing financers.
So even if an online ministry takes off and establishes an audience, even a virtual ministry needs to be able to communicate, answer questions, and pretty much interact with others. And those people interact with one another, which is all pretty much what the church has been doing for the past couple months, right?
And that was it. And that's what we talked about in our last podcast. You know, I mean, just to put it in country, folks kind of got used to that.
Yeah.
Folks could get used to that real easy, I think.
So if the virtual church is going to establish and minister to a regular audience, it will likely need the cooperation and support of at least a small group of people to spread the demands of different areas of the ministry out to prevent one or two people from becoming burdened with the demands. And it's especially important to have someone who is tech savvy.
Like Tracy.
Yeah,
like because Tracy. I want to tell you, I could have never done this. Would have been overwhelming without you by myself. Mm-hmm. It would just have been, because I thought about doing a podcast and just doing it. And it's not like I'm in love with my own voice, but it's the idea. I didn't want to burn. But guys, you know, it's still going to take a base of a group of dedicated people.
Yes.
Not necessarily, though, meeting in a building. Right, purchased sure. And purchasing property and all that stuff. Well, one advantage may be that those who commit to keeping the virtual church operating and interactive may be able to make their contribution from remote places. I mean, mm-hmm. consider that. I mean, the special music might come from one place. You know, the music could come from a whole different place. And those people never really even be in the same building together.
Well, you know, and our church did that I don't know, a few weeks ago, they had a singing for mm-hmm. a Sunday night service, and they live stream, and all of their singers in the church from their house recorded a song, and they compiled it all together.
Right.
And that's neat.
That's sort of what I was picturing is, okay, if anyone's going to have specials for our next service, you need to get them to me by Friday night. That way I can compile them all into,
you know, it might turn into where you would have more people that would be more comfortable to do something like that, where they weren't standing in front of a big audience.
Sure.
I mean, you might have more participation. And let's just put it, you don't have a paid music minister in one particular group that's mm-hmm. going to do the same, you know, every week.
Yeah.
Okay, but so their contribution could be made from remote places, and things such as online prayer chains and posting updates on the welfare of its virtual membership. Even the music ministry, you know, part of the virtual church may be contributed remotely, all of that. But it's going to take, you know, I just know from this endeavor that we have here, one person's not going to do this unless you're going to commit to it full time.
Yeah.
I just don't think that's very smart.
As far as the, you know, keeping people, we were part of a church that had a live chat on Facebook, and mm-hmm. it was great because you could keep up with everything that was going on.
Sure.
And pass messages back and forth.
Yeah. So as the virtual church emerges, is it going to face new challenges such as trolling?
I bet you can count on it.
Uh-huh. Will this kind of outside sabotage make it necessary to implement passwords and other security measures for folks to access more sensitive aspects of the ministry? I mean, will people actually have more access to counsel and support via FaceTime and apps like that?
I mean,
I would think so.
Yeah.
I would think, as having been several mm-hmm. decades in the ministry, that that would have been a great way, because me being bivocational, I was sometimes hard to access.
Sure.
You know, I had to work a job.
Right.
I had to pay the bills. So it had to kind of be in this sense. And, you know, but we're just brainstorming here. What's the virtual church going to be like? Any other ideas?
Do you guys have any other ideas on how the virtual church may be successful, or complications that it may have to allow for?
Yeah, and I was asking this group, and Trayson's asking all of you out They're if you got any, send them to us. Let us know. We would love to hear, because I'll be honest with you, we are contemplating a spinoff of God Beyond the Bible and maybe working some of these details out into a virtual church. But that's sometime in the future, because this is a task in itself right here.
And in the meantime, if you have any ideas, definitely email us, message us, let us know what you think.
We put in curious.
We'd love you to hear your pros and cons on the virtual church.
Yeah.
Why you think it wouldn't work? Just tell me why you might think it might not work, and it might work for some and not for others.
Well, with that, we're going to conclude part two and be right back with segment three.
And welcome to part three of episode 64 of God Beyond the Bible. And as you're aware by now, today's topic is the virtual church. We've been talking about chasing a lot of rabbits, went down a lot of holes, but got lost a few times. We're just talking about what the church might look like. So we've attempted to establish the need and opportunity for the virtual church to emerge as the way we do church post-2020 pandemic. We also briefly talked about the challenges and advantages associated with the virtual church, or just basically what it might look like.
Yeah. And in this segment, we'd like to discuss how the virtual church may alleviate some of the challenges that the traditional brick and mortar organizations are facing, namely finance.
Yeah.
And around here, we've been saying for a long time that the overemphasis on money and finance has been a detriment to the modern organized church. The biggest problems the church today has is money.
Or lack thereof.
Yeah. And not just how to raise it, but how it's being spent. There's more controversy in the modern church concerning assets and finance than any other single issue. And let's be honest, the expense of maintaining the building and property is one of the biggest challenges to the modern church, second only to meeting the expenses and salary of the pastor and the staff.
Now, this overemphasis on fundraising has also plagued and given much opportunity for speculation as to the true motivation and mission of not only the modern organized church, but especially the TV ministries we spoke of in segment one, and we talked about that. As with the modern church, it's not unusual for a great deal of time, energy, and resources to be directed toward fundraisers to keep the ministry afloat, not to mention to keep the payrolls flowing.
Yeah. How might the financial issues be addressed by the online virtual church? Money changes the motivation and dynamics of any organization, no matter how genuinely committed its participants are to their cause. Do you think we'll see other ministries become self-financed and volunteer-operated, such as we are here at God Beyond the Bible? I mean, where, by the way, we've never implemented any of the strategies that generates donations and income from our podcast.
We haven't. Right,
and we've done that on purpose, because it does change the complexion.
It does.
I think you very well might see it become more volunteer-oriented in the idea of a virtual church. For one thing, I think the ability to do it throughout the week and get it prepared, not have to count on Sunday morning, I have to be there, you know.
You're right, yeah.
At very least.
The convenience, the convenience factor again.
And just to the point of, you might be able to, I'm trying to think of how to phrase it properly, you might be able to step back and go, okay, we're going to have you and Tabitha, who both know how to do this. So if Tabby wants to go on a trip, it's not going to be a big deal for you to press these few buttons, or vice versa. And it relieves that tension of, I have to be there, I have to do this.
Right, right. Are you six, Trayson?
Probably.
I think you are.
So no doubt there'll be some who will figure out how to extract large sums of money.
You can count on it.
And promote self-gain out of the virtual church. We don't think anyone expects the tithe and offering request or demand to disappear completely. But as a whole, will this be an opportunity for ministries with missions and motives unfettered by finance to emerge and even reach thousands or millions without the stigma of money?
Yeah, and I think that's the lesson. We may even see the virtual church emerge much more effective.
I thought it was really interesting when
with
I was
the money issue
this.
And the building issue. Well, nobody's gonna get their feelings hurt over the color of the carpet or who gets to get paid to clean the building.
Well,
or,
and if you look at some of the larger churches, how much of your money? It's kind of like when you donate to a charity. How much of your money goes out to the community to do good? And I'm not saying that they don't. But and how much of it is spent just to maintain the building and just to pay the employees of the church?
It's going to be a very small percentage of most of the churches I know, because it can't be anything but a small percentage considering the upkeep of the building and the salaries that they have to meet.
Right. Yeah.
And when I was reading this, I had to think of, you know, I imagine that in the virtual church of the future, there will be something along the lines of like crowdfunding. Where if there's a need in your community, everyone can donate online to this.
And it never passes through your hands.
Exactly. Yes. It goes straight to these folks' account that need it.
Yeah.
And there's no middleman.
Well, and who doesn't donate? Who is not more likely to donate to something when you know 100% of the money you give is going to the cause that you donated to.
Exactly. And it's not going to be, and it's not on top of what you normally get. You know,
exactly.
Now, you're not giving unless you've already, you know, yeah. We know how that goes. Aside from the attractiveness of being unburdened with financial requests and demands, do you think folks in the religious community will find themselves more in charge of their own spiritual lives?
I hope so.
I do too.
That's something to consider, isn't it?
Yes.
That people can actually take control. They're not just going somewhere and being told what they actually are thinking about their spirituality and thinking about, wait a minute. And we can actually say, wait a minute. You know what? I just don't think that's the way I believe. Click.
Well, and it's true.
I just don't think, you know.
We know. I think everyone knows people who are tied up and sort of almost held hostage in a church from other relationships and things. You know, well, maybe their grandparents and their parents.
I was
going to
say, what happens
church.
Is you got a big family group there going there, and suddenly, and then if somebody marries into that family, you're expected to be there, you know.
And you're kind of roped in.
Yeah.
Well, we know some of those in the church community are suggesting that this whole pandemic and social distancing thing has been some kind of ploy to persecute the church. Any comments?
Oh, I'm just, it's been local. We've heard, it's been locally. We've seen that locally, that it's for the government to, could, you know what? There's lots of ways the government could do things to the church. They could start taxing the church.
Yes, exactly.
On that big, all those big, you know, there's lots of things the government could do if they, I want to be honest with you, we act like the government is an entity of people that's from a different culture. There's a lot of believers.
Yes. There are.
In leadership, they have, as they should, they've not allowed their perception of who God is and their faith to infringe on anyone else's rights.
And that's really what we want in freedom of religion,
I don't want anyone.
Everyone should be able to believe the way they want to believe, not the way I want them to believe. I think that's kind of
the way our founding fathers wanted it too.
Yes. I agree.
Well, I guess, Trayson, are you concluding, or who is it?
You go ahead and conclude.
Okay, someone said the only thing that remains the same is that everything changes. Was that Alan Jackson?
I think so.
As we discussed in a recent episode of God Beyond the Bible. As we've discussed in a recent episode of God Beyond the Bible, how we encounter and react to change is pretty much dictated by how we view the Almighty Himself. If we believe He only exists somewhere in our past, and He's calling us back to some point of antiquity, we will likely view the change as bad and spurred on by evil forces of the enemy. However, if you happen to be one of the growing number of believers who can see that the Almighty is, and in fact He always has been, in front of us and out ahead of us as humanity, you will find this inevitable transformation of the believing community as long overdue. No matter which side of the issue you choose, the change will come, and as we have been saying, the church a decade from now will look and operate much differently than it has for the past century or more.
As always, may God's grace, peace, and love be on you, in you, and radiate out from each of you, our fellow seekers, from all of us here at God Beyond the Bible.
Did you enjoy listening to God Beyond the Bible? Do you have an idea for an episode? Connect with us today. visit our website at godbeyondthebible.com, all one word, or send us an email at email@godbeyondthebible.com, or you can visit us on Facebook. Just type God Beyond the Bible into the search bar.